Welcome to the online ministry of Pacific Beach United Methodist Church, located in beautiful San Diego, California. Pacific Beach UMC is a member of the Reconciling Ministries Network and welcomes persons of all ages and backgrounds for worship, study, and service opportunities. More information can be found on our website at pbumc.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing.
I'm particularly grateful for our amazing musicians, particularly in singing a song about newness. I feel like that touches quite a bit on what I hope that we will explore today. I mentioned earlier that today is Transfiguration Sunday. And if you're a long-time churchgoer, you might know that this is a time sort of in between seasons. That this is a sort of standout kind of Sunday. Now, it's not something that a lot of churches celebrate, but I think it's an important Sunday to celebrate. But I want to start talking about circumstances and perhaps ways that we have thought about sort of marking time in our lives. And I've talked about this sort of concept before, although I'll do so in a slightly different way today. But there are times that our culture marks time, right? In terms of our culture, we likely, especially if you're old enough, right, you remember where you were when Kennedy was assassinated, right? Maybe if you're a little bit younger, you remember where you were when the Shuttle Challenger exploded. Right, there are cultural and national ways that we mark time. There are also a little bit more smaller, more intimate ways, perhaps, that a community can mark time. That community in Grand Island that I talked about with the children, where that first Sunday that very nice woman offered to help me out. That community marks time by a group of 7 tornadoes that all came through the town within a 24-hour period, right? You can understand how you would mark time by something like that. But I would suggest also that we have particular moments in our personal lives that feel like significant moments where something shifts, something changes. Now, for some of us, that might be a vocational change. For some of us, it might be a relationship change. It might be meeting that special someone. It might be a particular commitment related to that special someone. It might be the end of a relationship or a connection. It might be a time in your life where it's not necessarily vocational, it's not necessarily relationship-wise, but you just have a moment where something has to change and be different. For me, one of the most profound moments in my spiritual life was knowing, fine, and it wasn't the first time God said something, right? But really recognizing in a moment that God was calling me to ministry. For some, especially for those, well, I guess this one is exclusively for those who had the privilege of being parents, it's that moment when you know that you're going to be a parent. And maybe that's a particular kind of medical test, or maybe it's news through a fostering or adoption agency. That moment where you know that you're going to be a parent. And these moments, I would suggest, might be seen as a doorway. Because sometimes we can see them coming, and we can even make a choice, depending on what the circumstance is, we can make a choice about whether or not we're going to walk through that doorway. Right? I think about my call to ministry. I understood that God was calling me to ministry, but I still had a choice about whether or not to walk through that doorway. Now, if you find out about a relationship change, then maybe that's not only your choice, right? But there are lots of ways that we can think about this as a doorway, a change. sometimes they're a change that we can anticipate, that we see it coming, and we can see what's about to change. And sometimes it's one of those circumstances where we don't see it until afterwards. And in hindsight is 20/20. We look back and we go, oh, that's that doorway moment. That's that transitional moment. That's that moment of change. I bring this up in this way because I think that Transfiguration Sunday is one of those kinds of moments. I think it's one of those kinds of moments in terms of the liturgical calendar, right? Here we are, we've been in the season of Epiphany, right? It's the season that we talk about, the light of Christ, Emmanuel, has arrived in the world. And it's the Sunday where we transition from that light into the Lenten season that sometimes we identify as a bit darker, as a bit, marked by ideas of temptation and giving something up or taking on a spiritual practice. It's a time that we move into a more introspective kind of process in our spiritual life. Do you see how Transfiguration can be seen as sort of a doorway between those two seasons? But I would also suggest that in the text that we read, this is a transitional time in the biblical story of Jesus, where Jesus has been doing important ministry in and around the community of Judea. But when it comes to this moment of transfiguration, this is when it comes the common phrase, at least among churchy kinds of people, where Jesus turns his face to Jerusalem. Nearing what we might see as an ending of his ministry on earth. Certainly a time of preparation for betrayal and death and crucifixion and resurrection. Do you see how this time of transfiguration is a doorway, a transitional time? And I wonder if we might hear this text in a way that can speak to us related to our own transitional times. Hear now from the Gospel of Matthew.
Six days later, Jesus took Peter, James, and John, his brother, and brought them to the top of a very high mountain. He was transformed in front of them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as light. Moses and Elijah appeared to them, talking with Jesus. Peter reacted to all of this by saying to Jesus, "Lord, it's good that we're here. If you want, I'll make three shrines, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, look, a bright cloud overshadowed them. A voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, whom I dearly love. I am very pleased with him. Listen to him." Hearing this, the disciples fell on their faces, filled with awe. But Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," he said. "Don't be afraid." When they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus commanded them, "Don't tell anybody about the vision until the human one is raised from the dead."
A quick tangent. You know, my dad came up in acting, and he said the best way he ever upstaged someone on stage is he had a cup of water, and right before he walked off the stage, he put it right on the edge of a table where it was half hanging off, and then he left the stage. Do you think anybody was looking at that other actor on the stage, or were they just looking at that cup? So I'm waiting to see what that microphone's going to do. This time of transition in the text brings us, I think, an opportunity to think about those transitional times, those doorway times, those times of change in our own lives. One of the things, there are a number of things that stand out to me. I'm so grateful for some of the resources that I have the privilege of using in preparation, because there was such wonderful insight. The text starts with 6 days later, Jesus took Peter, James, and John up to the mountain. And my first question is, well, 6 days later than what? Right? Were you asking that question too? 6 days later. What happened 6 days before this is Jesus is gathered with his disciples and asks, "Who am I?" Now remember, some of the Gospels are in different orders, but this is how I want to talk about this. You see, Jesus predicts, he says, "Who am I?" And he's with the disciples, and they're all sort of, I don't know. I'm not really sure. You ever have that experience where you're faced with a profound question, and you sort of mumble, and suddenly your shoes are really interesting because that's what you're looking at, right? But then Peter speaks without thinking, which is classic Peter, right? You're the Messiah. One of the things I love about Peter is so often he speaks without thinking, but sometimes he says exactly the right thing, I think, because he's not thinking. You're the Messiah. And he's right. Now, Peter, not to be too successful all at once, he messes up right away. And that's when, Peter says, "You're the Messiah." Jesus says, "Yes, but there's an ending to my time in my ministry." And Peter gets frustrated, and that's when he starts to mess up. He says, no, that can't be. That's not allowed. Can you imagine telling Jesus, "I'm sorry, I know that there's this thing that you said that's going to happen. You're not allowed to do that." Can you imagine saying that to Jesus? Because that's what Peter does, right? Insert foot and mouth. And that's when Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan. Get behind me, adversary." So this is 6 days after that. Now, I sort of wonder what mood Peter's in. Because I can imagine if this one who you identify as Messiah, rightly for the very first time, this one that you've been following, that you've given up everything in your life for, this one who does incredible things and teaches incredible things, who sees and expresses the world in ways that are radically different than have been seen and expressed before, calls you an adversary. Calls you the personification of evil. Can you imagine that Peter's in a pretty lousy mood? And I wonder if it's for a few days. Well, it turns out Peter's one of the three who's invited to come up onto a mountaintop. You see, it's Peter, James, and John. James and John are the sons of Zebedee, the sons of thunder. They're the two guys who left their dad still sitting in a boat when Jesus called them. It's Peter, James, and John who go up onto a mountain. And they see something that would give any of us pause. I want you to put yourself in their shoes for just a moment. Even acknowledging that Jesus has done incredible things, and acknowledging that you have seen those things, imagine yourself on that mountain, and suddenly Jesus starts to glow. His face shines. His clothes are bright white like they're light itself. If any of us see something like that today, the first thing we're going to do is wonder if we ate something funny. We're going to wonder if there's some kind of chemical imbalance in us or in our brains. We're going to wonder if we're starting to crack up. We're going to wonder if we need an extra appointment with our therapist. We're going to wonder what's wrong with us. This happens. It's interesting. It jumps ahead a little bit, but it's interesting to me that Jesus, after all of this, says, "Now we're going down the mountain, but don't tell anybody about it." And I wonder if that's just as much, "Listen, you don't know what this is about, and if you talk about it, you're just going to sort of be an idiot, and so just shh. Wait until you've had time to gain more information and to see what this is truly about." But when we look at that moment on the mountain and something dramatic happens and they see people who weren't there a second ago, Moses and Elijah, we've talked on previous transfigurations about this perhaps representation of the prophets and the law. I don't want to get into that as much today, but they see Moses and Elijah. What does Peter do? He puts his foot right back in his mouth again. Let's build some structures. Let's hold on to this. I'm sure this is special, and so let's try to contain it. We'll come back to that. But then the disciples fall on their face in fear, I imagine, and in awe. And here's what stands out to me. Jesus comes and he touches them. He says, "Don't be afraid." And when they look up, all they see is Jesus. I wonder if for many of us in those times of change, in those times where it's that doorway moment, perhaps when we can see it in the moment or when we look back at it with the richness of hindsight, we see something that blows us away. We see something that tears us down. We see something that makes us weak in the knees and makes us fall down. Perhaps with awe, perhaps with fear, perhaps with dread, perhaps in horror. And I wonder if we ever have that moment where we feel touched by the Spirit, by something bigger than us in the universe, perhaps through a friend and perhaps not. And I wonder what it would be like in those moments if we could recognize that all we need is Jesus. I wonder what it'd be like in those moments when we're in that space of transition where we don't know what's going to happen next necessarily. And we surely can't talk about it. But we confess that all we need is Jesus. I confess that feels vulnerable to me. Because I can make up all kinds of stuff that I need in those moments. And it might be a friend, and it might be for me, I find music therapeutic. So I might just need to sit down at a keyboard or behind a guitar and do something. I might need to frolic on Facebook for a while and distract myself. But what if in those moments we recognize that all we need is Jesus? What does that mean for us? What does that change for us? How does that affect our trajectory? See, because coming back to what Peter wanted to do, he wanted to contain, he wanted to build a structure. And I wonder if for him that's because this was an ultimate, this was an ending when Jesus said, "No, this is a beginning." I would invite you, my friends, to look at this time, this doorway moment, this time of transition as a beginning. A beginning in our own faith lives as we begin to turn ourselves toward Easter, as we prepare ourselves for our Shrove Tuesday pancake dinner, for our Ash Wednesday celebrations that we might choose to engage in, for our sermon series that'll take place during Lent on gratitude. If you wish to sign up for any of our special gratitude-focused small groups, you can see Adam in the back or the form in the entryway, where we'll have lots of digital and face-to-face ways to connect and to grow in our gratitude. This denomination is in a transitional time where we sort of wonder what's going to happen next. Right? When the General Conference meets in May, is there going to be a division, or are we just going to mess it up some more? What's happening in this congregation, right, is we're still wrestling with two different service styles. Are we at a transitional moment in our lives personally, as a church, as a denomination, bigger? And what would it look like if what we choose to focus on, to acknowledge that all we need is Jesus? How does that change our outlook? How does that change us? I don't know. But I think maybe we can take a step into this together. I invite you to join me in leaning into the mystery. Amen. Holy and gracious God, as we are gathered together in this faith community, let us experience your spirit and your grace, your comfort, your joy, and your love. Let us find peace in this time of connection, in this time of worship, particularly as a community of faith, as we lean into you and we lean on one another. We hear these prayers and together lift them to you. Holy God, we lift up all of these things in prayer and any that are left unsaid. As we join together in the prayer taught to us by your Son, our Christ, as we say together, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.